Davey D hanging out with you. We are still talking to people that have been involved, that are in Chicago dealing with the NATO summit. And as you know, many people who are veterans of the wars went and they did a protest and an action, many of them giving back their medals in protest of what is going on there. One of the people that we have on the line for the Iraq Veterans Against the War is Matt Howard. Matt, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. We're definitely have a sense of doing something historic and hopefully starting a kind of process of healing with our Afghan brothers and sisters.
It's interesting that you all chose to, first of all, have a presence, and second, decided to do something very historic. We all know the city of Chicago being the scene in 1968, before many of us were even born, where people were being beaten up and clubbed. And the reason why was over war, the Vietnam War. So here we are some 40-some-odd years later. Did you have a sense of that history when you all went on this march yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a really active Chicago chapter with some really incredible people, and I think that was definitely, we definitely kept that in mind. We also kept in mind, Operation Dewey Canyon 3, which was Vietnam veterans against the war, and when they tossed their medals, in the Capitol in D.C. So we were definitely inspired by the leadership of our brothers and sisters in Vietnam veterans against the war.
When did that happen? Because many people, including myself, aren't aware of that history.
That, I want to say that was 1973. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty certain it was.
So describe what happened. You all did a march. What was the scene like? Where did you toss the medals? What was the reaction
sure.
like?
We started out about 2.5 miles from where we ultimately ended up, which is outside of the NATO summit. And had essentially worked out a game plan to march, to lead this march in with Afghans for Peace, our sisters Saraya, Samara, and Sabah, to kind of do this march for justice and reconciliation. So as we marched, as we kind of started off, I don't think any of us did how many people were going to be out there. And I think as we looked back, there's just a sea of people behind us. And we marched the 2.5 miles down to that NATO summit where there was a stage kind of set up, and many cops, they wanted to make sure I think we had our own security, but that there was also this appreciation that because we're marching the NATO summit, they wanted to make sure that things didn't pop off. And I mean, we marched, we had kind of a program set up where each one of us, first we had a process where Afghans for Peace and the veterans essentially started this kind of process of reconciliation. And then each veteran marched on the stage, gave their reason for basically getting rid of the medals, because the NATO generals didn't meet with us after many requests to meet with us to return our medals to them, to let them know that we feel like their representations of failed policies and really not worth the cloth and steel that they're printed on. We decided to throw them from the stage towards the as close as we could get to the NATO summit.
I think when people hear the tossing of medals, I don't think they have a full appreciation of what that means. Not everybody gets a medal who serves, and it really, correct me if I'm wrong, it speaks to the degree of commitment and that you all have demonstrated when you did serve. So can you describe the type of medals you all had, and what did that really mean at the end of the day when we have people of that caliber, who can honestly say they've been in the trenches? What does that really mean when you toss your medals like that?
I think that I mean, the medals that most of us were turning in were things like Global War on Terrorism Service and Expeditionary Medals, and our different campaign medals. So if you served in Iraq, you get an Iraq campaign medal, or if you served in Afghanistan, just get an Afghanistan campaign medal. And yeah, I mean, this is, it's demonstrative that these are people that did serve the time and were a part of these wars, and that these are kinds of ways that the military and government, they want to basically assuage our guilt, like by presenting these kind of tokens that are somehow supposed to represent some sort of honor. And we as veterans that have been over there and experienced that what we're doing is not honorable, that we're actually, you know, this idea of saving the hearts and minds and actually helping out the Iraqi and Afghan people is like further from the truth. We're actually creating conditions that are significantly worse. And I think that for a lot of this, for many of the veterans there, I think all of us, it was really cathartic in that, you know, we've been holding on to this guilt, and we've been holding on to the fact that we went out initially to do what we thought was going to be, you know, supportive, that we were going to help out these different countries and help out these people. And what we knew was that that's not really the case, that it was just a lie, basically.
You know, NATO is, you know, for lack of a better word, the world's police or army. They do the dirty work when we don't want to hear, and same with other countries. With that being said, because of NATO's global presence, are people from other nations starting to feel the same way that you all are feeling? And are you all linking up and maybe, you know, breaking bread with your counterparts in other countries in opposing the type of global policies that are so problematic for so many people?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we've definitely came across people that had traveled from all over Europe to this protest because of their awareness of, you know, NATO's effects. There's one German gentleman that said that something like 30,000 people were marching, and I think it was Munich. I can't remember the city exactly, but that this was really epic because of the way that their government, their you know, laws were set up, that there wasn't even supposed to be mass demonstrations like that. So I think that there is an awareness that because there is this kind of coalition of industrialized countries, that there's it's not serving any of our purposes. Really, it's only furthering war. When you've got a military apparatus like that set up, you know, I heard someone make the comment that when you've got a hammer, all you see is nails, and I think that's really kind of where NATO is at right now, especially because it was initially meant to fight the Cold War, and you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years now.
What is the next step from here? And people that are listening that may be inspired by seeing the type of stances that you all took, what do they need to either, one, be aware of, or what steps should they take to further the agenda that you all are trying to push?
You know, I think that in terms of ending the war in Afghanistan, the most recent poll is that 27% of our country is supportive of the war, which is far and away an all-time low. But the fact that they're talking about continuing the war past 2014 is you know, as disconnected from our you know, citizenry as they possibly could be. So I really think that requires us demanding not only from our elected leaders in ways that really puts pressure on them, but actually going out and, you know, kind of going out into the streets. You know, I think that we as veterans also want to be able to tell the story and put a human face on it, because so little of the population serves, there really is a disconnect between the military and our civilian community, and that we really want to make sure that these stories are getting out there. And, you know, IVAW as an organization definitely could use more support. We're unfortunately not very well funded at times, and just in terms of I think that on an individual basis, you know, when you have post 9/11 veterans coming back, actually hearing their stories, actually asking them, as opposed to a pat on the back and a, you know, support your troops kind of thing.
Matt, let me ask you this. We often talk about the military-industrial complex, and I don't think people really get the full gist of that. We think when we say military, there's a chain of command, the president is the chief commander, and that it's very separate from everything else in a very objective type of operation. But if everything around us is becoming more privatized and influenced by corporations, from your standpoint, how much of the military is corporate driven with their policies and their own agendas? And how far in that direction do you think our military has gone?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really, I mean, if you talk to anyone that has served in Iraq or Afghanistan or even served in stateside, you know, it's very easy to see those corporate connections. I saw many, many contractors that served in different capacities that are making $150,000, $200,000 a year for being over there when some of my friends were using government funding to get formula and diapers for the kids, you know, some of the people that I served with. You know, I think that what, you know, in my own kind of experience and looking into some of this stuff, it, by privatizing these functions that are not always, you know, violent in terms of like holding arms, not always Blackwaters, but logistical things that the military used to fill, you're actually taking our citizenry's ability to withdraw consent from these wars. And what I mean by that is that, you know, in 2007, 30,000 troops, you know, there was a proposal to throw 30,000 more troops into Iraq with the surge. There was a lot of debate around that. There was a lot of kind of hand-wringing and kind of thinking about whether this made sense. But from 2003 to 2010, the amount of civilian contractors in Iraq went from 20,000 to 170,000. And there was absolutely no debate about that.
170,000?
Absolutely.
So that's where the cost of war is really at then.
Well, it takes away our ability to know how involved we are in these countries, you know. In 2010, for the first time in our recorded history, there were more contractor casualties in Afghanistan than military casualties. And because we don't track contractors, because we don't think of them in the same way as the military, and they're, you know, we don't have reporters that are, you know, tracking contractor movements like they do, you know, unit movements in the military, there's a whole huge externalized piece that are in terms of continuing our wars that we don't even know about. And that allows us to continue these things.
Wow. So this is a lot deeper than I think many of us have thought. You know, Matt, we appreciate, you know, the service, and we appreciate the service, you know, especially, and by that I mean, you know, speaking truth to power and putting your body on the line in Chicago, taking those type of stance and trying to heighten the contradictions and, you know, shed some light on things that many people who are listening probably did not, weren't aware. So again, we thank you. And again, you know, how do people get a hold of the Iraq Veterans Against the War? Is there a website or anything or a phone number?
Yeah. Absolutely. We've got IVAW.org, and there's definitely a donate button on there. And then there's definitely ways that people can link into our community. We've got chapters all across the country and ways that they can help and support us in terms of providing, you know, skills that they have and things like that. And if people want to email, they can email info@IVAW.org.
Well, there you have it. Matt Howard, thank you so much. And we're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
You say you mean good for me, but you don't do it. You say you have a plan, but you just don't go through with it. You say you know the way to go, and I should follow. But all of your empty promises leave me hollow. And oh, how do I trust you? To me repeatedly, and oh, how do I have faith in you when you just don't said you could. Oh, say, can you see?
Oh, say, can you see?
You'll say that I'm wrong for stating my opinion to you. You'll say that I'm wrong and there'll be quiet consequences too. But I know my rights, babe. There'll be no law abridging the freedom of my speech or the right for me to petition for remedy of grievances. You lie to me repeatedly. I really do.